everybody. Good evening. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Boy, according to some of the emails I'm getting here, you folks were not very impressed with what Barack Obama had to say tonight. Let me just share a little bit with you. Of course, if you were watching his speech, and if you had your television on to any of the networks or the cables, you would have seen it. Gorilla Monk writes to me and says, Mike, did you happen to catch the little thing he said about the civilian surge in Afghanistan? Civilian surge. He means that they will be building a new Kentucky Fried Chicken, right? Jeremy Scahill said it best on his Twitter a few minutes ago when he said, quote, tonight's mention of civilian surge was brought to you by KBR Blackwater, DynCor, and the Fraternity Armor Group. Thanks for your patronage, end quote. I campaigned for this guy, and this is what I get in return. Sometimes I think I would rather have Bush back. At least with Bush, I knew there was no hope, and I never let my hope get carried away. I feel betrayed, Mike. I feel betrayed, defeated, and left for dead. Our military affairs correspondent, Sharon, writes in, subject line, oh my God. She writes, I was watching President Obama's speech. He is morphing into Bush. This is so disappointing and distressing. Who is this guy? And what did he do with my president? And Dr. Sachs writes, well, isn't this special? Dark day, huh? Sounds just like LBJ about Vietnam. I wonder what it is that the folks around the world say to the President of the United States when he gets to the White House. It must be deep, more than just threat of assassination, because they all change when they get in. Well, either someone knows some horrible stuff about our enemies than we do, or else, well, it's going to be more death, blood, and anguish, except people don't have any jobs now or hope of good employment to get through it. Anyway, I don't think this is the change I voted for. Dr. Sachs. Bob Alexander. He lied in the first minute of his speech as soon as he told the tale of how this all began. Stephen from Burbank. Mike, I heard some words from the president about some war somewhere over there. Is this the Afghanistan speech we've been hearing about? There's an old saying about reading between the lines. Here's what I heard between the lines. Quote, the right wing, as you know, has complete control over everything in the world, even me. Some of you are hearing me say things that you know to be absolute lies, and some of you know that the right wing is enjoying completely using me to rub your noses in it. You know it. I know it, and we're going to have to try to live through it somehow. In the meantime, if you want to, just try and hold in there somehow. Hold on. Just try to hold on there somehow. Don't expect anything from me, because if you want anything good to be done, you're going to have to do it yourselves. I'm trapped like a rat. End quote. Mike, maybe there are some other commentators saying the same thing. Stephen in Burbank. Well, it was I don't know. I don't know what to say. You know, I don't have a script. I don't know what to say. I feel like these four people just emailed me, and I've got more here, but I don't know what to say. At all. I do know that this psychotic prick, Dick Cheney, is still out there mouthing off. The balls of this guy. I mean, here's a guy who utterly destroyed the country, Dick Cheney, and he's sniping at Bush. And Bush, I'm sorry, sniping at Obama. And Obama is doing everything the right wing wants him to do. You have any doubt that Cheney is a psychopath? I hope not. He is. He's a crazy bastard who belongs in prison or in safely ensconced in a mental hospital someplace where they'll take care of him and keep him drugged up. If you work in the mental health field, don't send me an email right now and say, Jesus, Malloy, what a thing to say. This is from Rabbi Arthur Waskow. I wrote this at the shalomcenter.org. 10 best reasons to send more U.S. troops to Afghanistan. 10. If you want to breed and train more would-be terrorists who hate the USA, the best way to do it is attacking Afghan villages where key al-Qaeda cells have left to regroup elsewhere. 9. If you want to keep Afghan women powerless, ignore the advice of their own leaders that grassroots economic development is crucial and send the Marines instead to boost the power of macho warlords who gather loyalty by fighting foreign invaders. 8. If you want to make sure that no one is learning that government could do good things like building schools and community health clinics in America, hiring teachers and writers and railroad construction workers, feeding hungry children, or renewing our rotting sewer system, then sink hundreds of billions of dollars into this war so as to bankrupt domestic needs programs. 7. If you want to make even higher profits from burning oil and coal instead of letting America invest in creating a wind, solar, renewable energy network that will heal the climate crisis, free us from coal and oil and make America competitive again, a multi-billion dollar war is terrific. 6. If you want to stymie all investigations into past use of torture and extraordinary rendition by past U.S. governments and utterly negate the closing of Guantanamo, multiplying prisoners in Bagram, Afghanistan will help a great deal. 5. If you like to knit blankets for legless veterans while making sure the Veterans Administration is so swamped with the wounded that they have to wait months in rat-infested wards for treatment, more maimed soldiers are by far the best result of a war. 4. If you're trying to do research on the suicide rate, homeless rate, and other symptoms of post-traumatic stress syndrome, there will never be a better milieu for producing experimental subjects. 3. If you want to create a surge of right-wing populist rage that will shatter the Democratic Party and elect Sarah Palin president in 2012, then combine thousands of dead and maimed American soldiers with millions of unemployed American workers. And if you can think of 2 more, please add them by commenting at theshalomcenter.org. Man, I have no idea what to say. Mikey Weinstein is going to join us top of the next hour. You know who he is? He's an attorney, former Air Force officer. He's founder and president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. And he's written about the infiltration of the U.S. military with evangelical Christians who are bound and determined to bring about Armageddon or Jesus' return or something. He's a graduate of the United States Air Force Academy, and he also served as a judge advocate general for 10 years. He spent 3 years in the West Wing of the Reagan White House as legal counsel. And in his final position there, Weinstein was named the committee management officer of the much-publicized Iran-Contra investigation. Sounds a little dodgy, doesn't it? Well, he's going to be on tonight, coming up shortly. What do you think? I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's open the phones a little bit early. As soon as we go into this break, we will open up the lines here. And if you want to call in, we're going to have to clear lines at the top of the hour so Mikey Weinstein can get in. But right now, we'll go ahead and take some calls. And this is about it. Just keep it on topic tonight, okay? I mean, at least during this segment. What we're talking about is your take on what Barack Obama had to say at the West Point Military Academy tonight, and his determination to, or somebody's determination to send more people into Afghanistan. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
kids. Don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, very quickly, and then to your phone calls. Carrie writes in, the president disappointed me tonight. I'm angry and horrified that the killing will continue. I don't know what country he was talking about when he said something to the effect that the United States does not take the resources of other countries. Does he think we're stupid? What happened to the man Michelle married? Carrie. Dave in Long Beach, on Obama's speech tonight, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Bush could have given a better speech than the one Obama finished a little while ago. Tonight was Obama's 1965 LBJ war escalation moment. Maybe he should remember how popular Truman was because of Korean War actions. Tonight's speech was all double talk and I'm not buying any of it. The sad thing was that he didn't surprise me. You always called Afghanistan the good war. Kucinich in 2012, I wish. Roz writes, Mike, apparently certain leaders in Central America think that Obama looks like a prisoner of the military. Hugo Chavez says he has seen other leaders that were so-called prisoners, and that in his mind, Obama definitely is one. Somehow that has the ring of truth to it. William writes, Mike, Obama lost me. I'll leave it at that. What struck me most was the look on most all the cadets' faces. I did not see hope there. Anna right, so sad. I once saw Charles Grodin interviewed where he recounted a criticism of his performance as a talk show host. Some critic chided Grodin for having dead shark-like eyes. That's exactly what I saw in Obama tonight. Dead shark-like eyes. So sad. Anna. Oh, hi, Anna. Haven't heard from you for a while. All right. Dave is in Fisher, Illinois, listening on XM.
Oh, Mike, how are you doing?
I'm all right.
Oh,
how are you?
Boy, rough couple of days. I listened to your show last night about the food stamps and how it's on the rise. And today, I wish you would have done something bold and just said we're going to stop the killing and we're going to leave.
Wouldn't that have been something?
It would have been change I could have believed in.
There you go.
But I really don't see a break between anything he's done so far and the Bush administration. I mean, I could have voted for John McCain and gotten this. We can't even get a decent health care bill passed in this country, so now we're going to send more Americans over there, kill and be killed, and have the same result at the end of the day. Very disappointing. I think we're going to end up with Sarah Palin in 2012, and to be honest, Mike, we deserve her at this point.
You know, I think you're right. That's what I said back, I don't know, a year and a half ago. We ought to just go ahead and elect McCain because, the hell that's coming is going to be impossible for a political party or a president to deal with. It might as well be the Republicans and McCain that go under the waves, but no. People bought the story on Obama. I sure did.
Well, it seems the closer we get to the ground, the faster we're going here. It's like jumping out of a plane without a chute opening, and we're going to get the hard right administration in 2012, and we're going to get a big old taste of it. We'll see how we like it. But again, I thank you for what you do. The show last night about the food stamps was just
wasn't that very telling. Oh God, yeah,
it's very telling. I mean, people, you know, I've grown up around a lot of Republicans, and people get food stamps, and without to digress the last night show, but they're lazy, they don't work, and I've seen people have worked their entire lives. And it's the one thing that's keeping them and their families from going under. And I always laugh when I talk to people. I'm like, socialism is a terrible thing until you get it.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Hey, Dave, thanks, man.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, take care. Appreciate it. Yeah, I think it's called Ground Rush. Michael writes, regarding the West Point speech, damn few people know a lot about the long history of U.S. involvement in Vietnam, and I'm guessing that Obama is one of those who doesn't. He was 7 years old at the height of that war is probably a secondary consideration. But to say that they're not the same, Afghanistan and Vietnam, is empty reassurance. The real similarities are in the decisions of the U.S. leadership in both conflicts. Right, and Michael, right, and I think that's the point that people have been trying to make. The similarities, it's not, of course not. We said this last night, Afghanistan is mountains. Vietnam was jungles. And then you can, you know, follow through from there. the similarities were in the decisions made and the reasons those decisions were made. And I have something here tonight. I hope I get to it. It's not that long. It's LBJ's speech in 1965 when he decides to escalate to the tune. Eventually, 500,000, 600,000 American troops were sent. At one time, I think we rotated in and out, what, 6 million people or 5 million? But it was in 65 when, you know, a lot of people, myself included, felt the that cold wind of going into the military and going off to fight a war that you didn't believe in, howling at our backs. I remember that like it was yesterday. All right, we have a break coming here. We will we'll come back after this break and take some more of your phone calls. It just I watched the whole thing tonight. I got Molly to sleep a little bit early, so you know, with the story, so that I could watch this, and it was just not at all what I wanted to hear. But of course, there was no surprise. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating, but you tell me.
Before the hour, or something like that, Mikey Weinstein will join us after the top of the hour. Brian writes, and I thought for a while now that the best thing Obama can do is to just do what LBJ did and make a speech to the American people telling us he will not seek a second term in office. Wow. Well, it's been going like this tonight. This is from, who's this from? Mary in Denver. Mike, do you remember 1967, 68? I do, and I couldn't bear to watch or listen to LBJ by then in his presidency. One more Mafil Americans and I would upchuck. I got to that point with W within a few months of his illegal reign. Turn it off. I'm already there with Obama and turned off the radio on my way home for work. His voice, his supposed eloquence, his treachery, it's all too unbearable to me. I voted for him but refused to contribute to volunteer. I guess I instinctively knew he would shaft us. When this man of hope uses the military as window dressing, just like his monstrous predecessor, I refuse to witness the ongoing show. And soon he leaves for Oslo to receive his Nobel Peace Prize. Back to my Shiraz, your long-suffering old pal, Mary in Denver. I hear you. Boy. Robert is in Downey, California, or it's Robert Downey in California, one of the two. Hey, Robert.
Yeah, my pleasure, Mike. You know, I consider the United States to be a terrorist nation.
Mm-hmm.
And we killed 1.2 million Iraqis that didn't do anything to us.
Right.
And I think that qualifies, or you have to get to 6 million, I don't know. But, and then when he started saying about our morality and you know, I was waiting for him to throw God in there, too, but he stopped at that.
Mm-hmm.
American morality and, you know, mom and apple pie, and we got to go do this. It made me puke. I'm going to melt this plastic Obama Biden sign I had in my front yard now.
Oh, God. All right. Well, thanks, Robert.
All right, buddy.
All right, sir. Take care. Yeah, I hear you. Hassan writes, Mike, I didn't vote for Obama. I voted for Cynthia McKinney. Believe me, if there had been a chance of McCain winning in California, I would have voted for Barack Obama. For several weeks after the election, I did feel like my grandparents, who were the grandchildren of slaves, were spinning in their graves. Most people over 50, like you and me, have been through several national elections, and at this stage in the game, we refuse to fall for the hype. Hassan. Yeah. Jerry's in Pampa, Texas, listening on Sirius. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, hey, great show. I've listened to your show for a long time. First
Thank
time
you.
I've called.
Well, thanks a lot.
You know, I just am really tired of wars. I was interested to hear his explanation for staying in Afghanistan. And I'm wondering, do you think it would be better just to see what would happen and not go to war? I mean, it was his explanation that they had foiled some attempts that those Taliban cells over there are plotting to invade again or to, attack this country. Is that what's going on? It wasn't clear cut on that.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, one of the things that it took me a while to realize about Barack Obama or any politician who is also eloquent and a great speaker like Ronald Reagan is that they have the ability to keep it vague, and then you can figure out later what the hell it was they said. I don't know what he was talking about. I've read reports from alleged CIA experts or military experts that Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan is less than 100 people. I have no idea what he's talking about, Jerry. I just know that as desperately as this country needs our people home and things to go here, money here, resources here, focus here, we have another president now who's got to play tin soldier, and it's really disgusting. It's
You know, if that's what's going on, I don't like it either. And how can we research this and find out? Didn't he talk about some foiled attempts? That we've already foiled some attempts.
Well, there was some stuff in the papers recently. I mean, there have been a couple of arrests, some big ones. I can't name them right now, but in the past 4, 5, 6 months, yeah, people that had, or so we're told, had connections to Al-Qaeda or connections to terror organizations. You know, I've said before, man, if you listen to this program on a regular basis, you know, I don't know what the hell's going on. I have no idea. I'm just like you, Jerry. I don't have a clue. I'm just trying to sort through it all. You know what I'm saying?
But when you listen to Obama speak, I mean, I voted for him. I really think that almost on every issue he's aligned with what I believe, you know, and he's very intelligent.
Right.
So I'm a bit confused because it's like, oh, now we're going to go down another path. Okay, a new thing would be let's cut it short at 18 months. 18 months is just too far out, you know. I mean,
well, it is, and you know, that's you can't, not you or me, but one can't make a decision about a war 18 months out. You can't make a decision about a war 18 minutes out. You know, you can set your tactics a certain way. You can declare your objectives and what your strategy is going to be. But anybody who knows, you don't have to have been in combat. I was never in combat. You don't have to be in combat to understand what war historians have been writing for the past 200 years. As soon as you engage in conflict, all the battle plans, everything that you had carefully laid out is out the door. And you do it by what the evolving situation demands. So, you know, for Obama or anybody to say, well, we'll be out of there in 18 months. I have no problem with setting a deadline. This is what the right wing drives the right wing crazy. Well, that tells our enemies when we're going to leave. You know, to me, that's hog snot. The problem I have with it is that you can't conduct a war based on predictable events. All hell can break loose, and things change in a moment. You know, I think back to the Tet Offensive in 1968. We were being told that the Vietnam War was almost over. I remember. I was there. Not there, but I mean, I was here in the States, and I remember how everyone was saying, well, 1968, look, we've defeated them. Boom! The Tet holiday came along, and all of a sudden, NVA regulars and VC and exploded all over the countryside and showed the Americans, over my ass, we will drive you out. And they did. I got to leave there. Thanks, Jerry. I appreciate you checking in. Remember that? If you're over a certain age, you remember that. You remember that. The Tet Offensive. IBA Music? Is that right? Mike, Obama chose to live. He has no choice. He has to give the military-industrial complex what they want. There are billions and billions of dollars that will be made from our being there, and they will kill him if he crosses them and chooses and does not obey. He had to choose between living and dying, and he chose to live. Yeah? Okay. Well, that's what a lot of people said about Jack Kennedy. He made the wrong decision. Oh, God. Who is this freak? Weightlifter's Warehouse? Yikes, I'm a first-time listener. I was shocked with what you were saying. You really pissed me off. You are unrealistic and misguided. Poor boy, what planet are you from? What rock did you crawl from? How old is this letter writer? 12? I will never listen again, and I will spread the word among my friends to do the same. Oh, Jesus Christ, go away. Put it on Twitter, you freak. I will tell my friends. I will never listen again. Bug off. David is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, David.
Hey, greetings, Mike. You know, I was interested in this Afghan...
Oh, is this the David that I hung out with?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, hey, how you doing? How you doing? How's,
well,
your, how's your cab...
Excellent, actually.
How's your, your cab driver friend? I forget his name.
Mike.
Mike, how's that?
How can I forget that?
Oh, can I forget that? You doing all right? Mike's doing all right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, enough with the chatter. Go ahead, David.
I mean, the economy's weak. Hey, you know, a couple of different things. First of all, you remember in the very beginning when Bush started invading, he was talking about a war without end.
Yeah,
it came up constantly, and I've talked to other hosts, and they don't remember it. Most of them are neocon hosts, but that was talked about, a war without end.
Yes,
and they also put it in, you know, religious terms too. They allowed it to skate like that, so it's the eternal war, virtually. You know, translatable, it'd be an ugly, ugly scene.
Mm-hmm.
But the war without end, and then you got contractors that have guaranteed cost overruns on a war without end. You look at any contract lawyer, and you tell them, you show them a contract that says you can have an endless war with guaranteed cost overruns.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, absolving you of your sins, like they're doing with Blackwater. I mean, it is translatable. It's just going to come out as dumb and ugly.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's really where we're at. I told Kathy, you know, that my biggest theme, though, still is that it's, if we got global warming, and in 20 years, we're looking back at what were you doing this day? Oh, we were allowing a war, you know, allowing trillions to get spent on.
Yeah, crazy. Instead of facing the greatest catastrophic event in the history of the planet. Hey, David, I got to leave there. Thanks,
hey,
man.
Right. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Take care, sir. We'll be right back. Don't forget, Mikey Weinstein coming up at the top of the hour. Ties into what David said. Weinstein knows about the evangelicalizing of the U.S. military. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Listen, there are two sides to every story, right? Today, those who share Sarah Palin's hate-filled politics have the number one best-selling book in America to present their case. And, of course, Limbaugh, Coulter, Fox News to promote it. On the other side, us. Our resources are a little less powerful, but we have a highly entertaining solution. If you want to show your opposition to everything that Sarah Palin stands for, and enjoy what the Huffington Post calls a superb, engaging read from start to finish, I've got the book for you. It's, you've heard about it. It's called Going Rouge, Sarah Palin, An American Nightmare. And it's been assembled by two senior editors at The Nation magazine. So you know it's going to be good. It includes the best, sassiest writing on Palin, bar none, including razor-sharp contributions by Naomi Klein, Katrina Vandenheuvel, Matt Taibbi, Eve Ensler, Frank Rich, Katha Pollitt, and Tom Frank. Now, you can order it as a paperback or as an ebook from a link at my website, MikeMalloy.com. Makes a great holiday gift, too. So don't let the neocons have the tea party all to themselves, okay? Get Going Rouge, and you can get it. If you're going to get it, go get it at MikeMalloy.com. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. A couple more emails here real quick. This is from Tony in Marshfield, Missouri. Mr. Malloy, maybe I'm cold-blooded and just don't realize it. My response to Obama's speech was much different from what I'm hearing from many of your listeners. I heard an articulate man, as opposed to Bush, detailing why we need to finish what we started. We can't simply walk away. It's our responsibility to finish what we started. That doesn't mean I want more deaths. It does mean that we have a duty to the Afghan people. Wouldn't it be a blank thing to do to blow their country to hell and just say good luck as we leave? I hope I'm not wrong. I get the impression Obama sincerely wants to end the war in Afghanistan. I think it's too easy to sit on the sidelines and say, just bring them home. Bear in mind that serving the military is not something I had or have the nerve to do. If my daughter was being shipped out, maybe my opinion would be different. Tony in Marshfield, Missouri. Well, stick around, Tony, because at some point tonight I'm going to share with you something that Bob Alexander sent in, and I'll read that to you. Irish Dave, who was in the airborne, said, Mike, here's a little nugget spoken aloud at Fort Lewis Chapel in the woods. Quote, your duty as an American soldier is to remember that no one in the world has the right to be left alone. Spoken by a major, U.S. Army, the Airborne Society of Jesus. Seems just like yesterday. Irish Dave. P.S. Regarding President Bohica's speech tonight, just two words, no sale. John in L.A., do you really think Obama will start drawing down the troops in any meaningful way starting in the middle of 2011? If so, I have some prime waterfront property for sale in the Everglades. Really cheap. And B. writes in, hey, Mike, continuing the Bush crime family's insane wars, recapitulating to Republicans, insurance companies, and the military-industrial complex isn't what I had in mind when I voted for change. How about you? Emma Goldman was right. If voting ever really changed anything, it'd be illegal. I burnt my voter registration card. I'm no longer participating in the political farce. F it. I'll create art and live as best I can. B. Paul is in Harrisburg, PA. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
Okay. Hey, well, not really okay. Look, I'm a white man married to a black woman. I have two kids. I'm married for 26 years. I campaigned, voted for Obama, did my very best to get the men elected, not to elect a Republican.
Right.
Okay. My problem right now is I'm faced with the choice of come the 2012 elections and the 2010, senatorial, congressional. Do
right.
I vote for Democrats that act like Republicans, or do I just vote for Republicans? And I'm reaching to the point where, you know what? If they're going to do me the way the Republicans do, why not just vote Republicans? At least I know it's the enemy doing it to me.
Yeah, a lot of people feel that way.
I mean, look, this idea of 18 months, it'll take 6 months to a year just to deploy those 30,000 troops, Mike.
Yeah.
Along with the necessary backup that they need. How is it going to work 18 months? What are we, stupid?
Well, somebody thinks we are, I guess, or thinks we're misinformed or uninformed, which most Americans are. I hear what you're saying.
It's ridiculous. And the person that wrote that email about breaking it and us having to fix it, isn't that what they said about Iraq?
Yeah, that's it's been said before about several other situations that we found ourselves in. And
we broke it. The way you fix it is not by sending 100,000 troops. The way you fix it is by sitting down and dealing with all the parties involved. This is a country, Afghanistan's a country, aside from its historical, the historical inability of anyone to dominate that country, there is, If we really want to help Afghanistan, we sit down with these people, whether they're religious fanatics or not, and try to work out a solution that will benefit the Afghan people. And that doesn't mean you kill them with drone aircraft, you blow them up with missiles, you send in more troops to attack their villages. And you know, all being done by American soldiers who are just as freaked out as the Afghan people are. You know, I doubt that there are many young American men or women sitting home tonight saying, I can't wait to get my hands on a gun and go kill these goddamn people. You know, I don't know. Christ, I don't know. Paul, thanks, man. I got to move on. Thanks. Appreciate what you had to say. But just like we said, just like I said, before Thanksgiving, people were sitting down to Thanksgiving dinner last Thursday. And come next Thanksgiving, there are going to be tables with missing young men and young women who will be killed in Afghanistan. Who believes that the Afghan people are just going to sit back on, I don't care who they are, that they're just going to sit back and say, oh, well, you know, here comes these stormtroopers to, that's how they're going to be perceived, to liberate us? Get out of my goddamn country. You know, I've been throwing you bastards out for 2,000 years. You don't think I can throw you out too? Oh, please. I don't know. Mikey Weinstein, when we come back, we're going to clear the lines now. And then we will open them back up after we talk with Mikey Weinstein. All right? Thanks a lot. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Weinstein is. He's an attorney, businessman, a former Air Force officer. He's also founder and president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. Also an author. He wrote a book with God on Our Side, One Man's War Against an Evangelical Coup in America's Military. He graduated from the U.S. Air Force Academy in 1977, served as a judge advocate general for 10 years. He also worked in the Reagan White House. And was committee management officer of the Iran-Contra investigation, which, I don't know, Mikey, that's a little... I've always had deep reservations about the Iran-Contra investigation.
I still do myself.
Welcome to the program. I'm glad you could join us tonight.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mike.
I want to ask you, since it's very timely, did you watch, and if you did, Obama's speech? You know, a quick impression. What do you think?
Well, you know, I'm a Republican, but I'm one who voted for Clinton twice and for Gore and Kerry, and I voted for Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it. I found it to be particularly interesting as an Academy graduate. Particularly interesting is the fact that it came from West Point, and the student body at West Point, Mike, it happens to be called the Corps of Cadets.
Mm-hmm.
It's made up of 32 cadet companies. They were all there in attendance, as you saw in the audience.
Right.
They all have names. Do you know what cadet company C1, Charlie 1, is called?
No.
Well, it's called the Crusaders. And until we stopped it 3 weeks ago, they would dress up one of their cadets in an 11th century crusader outfit, complete with fleur-de-lis or cross on the shield and a big, a big saber run, or a big sword running up and down the sidelines at their football games. We stopped it for their final home game against the Virginia Military Institute. We understand that they are reconsidering it right now, but I found that to be amazing that 1/32nd, if you will, one of the 32 companies there is called the Crusaders, and we can't seem to get West Point to change that. So I watched the speech. My problem is, I want to support the president. I really do. I just don't understand how we can turn Afghanistan into, Kentucky in 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to come in. And here's the problem. I agree with what Matthew Ho said, the State Department official, former Marine captain, who said, look, half of Afghanistan wants us to be there. The
right.
other half doesn't want us there. By sending more troops, the other half's just going to fight us harder for, 78 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And another 78, Tuesday nights, we're going to be gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And I go back to the famous statement from the 19th century, Kipling's statement, describing Afghanistan as the graveyard of empires.
Mm-hmm.
The Soviet Union couldn't do anything there, and they're as close to Afghanistan as Arizona, as Alabama, I guess, is to, or Mississippi is to Georgia, or as mm-hmm. Arizona is to New Mexico. I think the Cato Institute, which is hardly known as a left-wing,
right.
Democratic or leaning or organization, very right-wing, was very much against this surge, and they had their own plan for what we need to do to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And we have over 1% of the United States military. It doesn't sound like a large number, but it is. We have over 400 active-duty U.S. Marines, sailors, soldiers, and airmen, who midshipmen and cadets, who are our clients, and 96% of them in the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. And again, if you're listening on the web, we're at militaryreligiousfreedom.org. 96% of them are Christians. We have mm-hmm. plenty of them that are over there. And I don't understand how this is going to fix something when we announce a surge, and, by the way, we're getting out in 78 weeks. But by that time, you're going to be a whole new nation, and everything's going to be fine, particularly when we have an incredibly corrupt partner in Karzai.
Yeah, it is madness, and I don't want to sidetrack you too far into Obama.
No, it's fine. This is what we do. This is one of our rodeo events. Mm-hmm. We have to look at this. And I'll be the first one to say it. Mr. Commander in Chief. Our message to the Muslim world. I mean, you have one of the cadet companies there is called the Crusaders, and their mascot is an 11th century crusader. Oh, this is great.
Yeah, yeah. How did this? Let me back up. Obama's speech in Cairo was a real barn burner. I think a lot of people who are of the Muslim faith around the planet figured, okay, here's a guy that maybe we can do business with, even though he's an American. And I realize he's getting a lot of resistance on that particular issue, but kind of stepping sideways, when did the United States military take this turn into these deep religious overtones? I realize, that old expression, there's no atheist in a foxhole, which I think is nonsense. I think a lot of atheists in foxholes, but when did this religious thing happen?
Of our clients sent a picture to us from to Crete in Iraq, a lot of atheists. They dug a foxhole, took a picture, and sent it to us, and said, "Mr. White," they were all heavily decorated, heavily decorated, and they all made it very clear how they were supporting what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
The break point, Mike, that you're talking about is 1972. We've done we've been in this fight for over 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
In 1972, we had the end of mandatory conscription, the end of the draft. Although we certainly still have a poverty draft.
Right.
And we still have a backdoor draft. Right.
Right.
Once you're in, they can keep you in. But at least prior to 1972, we could make a cognizably, rational and reasonable argument that we were pulling people in with some degree of fairness and equanimity from, a level playing field, if you will, from
mm-hmm.
what we now refer to, as red and blue states. With the end of the draft, with the so-called volunteer force, we saw this morphing. And it wasn't really that slow. Fairly significantly, in the course of societal events and sociology, a fairly swift morphing to states that we would now refer to as red states, where there was this perfect storm occurring between politics, religion, and nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
And the religion was only one religion, and it wasn't mainline Christianity or Catholicism. It's what we refer to as fundamentalist, evangelical, or dominionist Christianity.
Right.
And it grew, and it grew, and it grew. And then it continued to grow through the 80s, And it hit a significant point of really taking off in 1994, Mike, because what happened there, you may remember, was that was the end of the second year of the Clinton presidency when we had the so-called Gingrich
right.
revolution, when
right.
the politics of polarization really reared its ugly head.
Mm-hmm.
It continued on for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, and then it went into hyperdrive, you know, with 9/11. And like I said, it's not that our foundation, the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, doesn't care about, you know, whether or not there's prayer in school or whether or not there's a, you know, a Christmas creche put on the front lawn of a local police
right.
department. You know, we're fighting essentially the fundamentalist, you know, Christian Taliban in the American military, which is the technologically most lethal organization ever created by
mm-hmm.
humankind.
Is there a level of officers, and I'm talking about flag rank now, I'm talking about the guys way up, is there a level of officer that wishes his troops had the same religious dedication that Muslim fighters do? In other words, the ones willing to commit suicide?
You know, there's no question. Eisenhower, it was ironic because going back to the speech tonight, that was held in Eisenhower Hall at
mm-hmm.
West Point, right? And Eisenhower's famous, you know, warning, right, from his farewell speech was to watch out for the military-industrial complex. What we're fighting in the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, we've actually coined the term a fundamentalist Christian parachurch military corporate proselytizing complex. Let me give you an example. There are many parachurch organizations. They're not religions, but they are, you know, like you've heard of some of them, Focus on the Family,
right, right.
Day for Christ. In the military, we have an organization called the OCF, which you might not have ever heard of. It's called the Officers Christian Fellowship. It's huge, and it's located on all of our 1,000, give or take, U.S. military installations that we currently have as we make a garrison out of the globe in 132 countries around the world. We have about 1,000, and this organization is vibrant on all of them. Now listen to this. We beat them up for years about this. They finally tried to change some of their key terms a few months ago, but we know these are still their terms. Their main mission statements had said in the past, they tried to alter it for cosmetic purposes, as I said, now that we're in court against fighting this, was we quote, and think in terms of the Taliban or Al-Qaeda, their version of it. Here's what the United States, you know, Officers Christian Fellowship, their goal, their main purpose statement. We want Christian officers exercising biblical leadership to raise up a godly military. There are three expressed goals. Number one, we want to see a spiritually transformed United States military.
Hey, hold it right there, Mikey. I got a break here. Just hold that
sure.
thought. We'll come right back. We're talking to Mikey Weinstein, who is the president and founder of Military Religious Freedom Foundation. Stay with us.
There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah, 21 past the hour. We are talking with Mikey Weinstein, who is the founder and president of Military Religious Freedom Foundation, whose sole objective is to handle the pressure from the Dominionist Christians who are insisting that, I guess they're insisting, Mikey, that every war would be a religious war for the greater glory. You know, I have to tell you, I am absolutely an atheist. I'm kind of the school of thought that looks at religion as I don't know. I don't want to say a weakness, but it's something that is a diversion. And, but I was brought up in the Protestant faith, Baptist and Methodist. So I'm very, very familiar with the Bible, very familiar with Christian Armageddonist teachings, and they are very, very dangerous. And, I guess what I asked you before the break, and let's continue this, not necessarily the when this started, but the why.
I think that the concept is when you, as I was saying before the break, you know, we're dealing with organizations, parachurch organizations like the Officers Christian Fellowship that I was enumerating their goals. You know, they want to see a spiritually transformed U.S. military. Number two, listen to this one, with ambassadors for Christ in uniform. I always tell people, Mike, that parenthetically, that hasn't worked out too well for planet Earth the last 2,000 years.
No, it hasn't.
And then lastly, empowered by the Holy Spirit. And then their key Bible study is that they push on their helpless subordinates. These are the officers. Some of them are at the flag level. You know, they're multi-star generals, right, and admirals, four stars, political appointees, et cetera, four-star admirals and generals. It's, quote, not to allow the opposition, all of which is spearheaded by Satan, to prevent us from regaining territory for Jesus Christ in the U.S. military. Look, you know that their apocalyptic perspective is they want the world to end yesterday.
Yeah.
It's very common if you look at people, some of the dominionist leaders that are out there. There's one who's very popular. He's in the Cincinnati area, the Columbus, Rod Parsley of the World Harvest Church in Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. Is fond of telling his audience on Sundays. You know, he'll say he promises them a 200-mile-long river, 4.5 feet deep, filled with nothing but the human blood of those that his version of this weaponized gospel of Jesus has slaughtered at the Battle of Armageddon. And then he throws his hands up and says, therefore, my Christian brothers and sisters, rejoice, for the worst is yet to come. They do not want peace. Peace is bad. That's why they view Obama as the Antichrist. They call me the Antichrist. Anybody that wants peace is bad, because the world's supposed to blow up into pieces. That's the thing. And nukes are real handy for that. Let me explain what we're talking about on your show tonight. For the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, and again, for those that want to see this with their own eyes, it's on our website at militaryreligiousfreedom.org. We're talking about not a problem, an issue, or a challenge. We're talking about a national security threat, Mike, that's internally every bit as much as we're facing externally by a resurgent Taliban and an al-Qaeda that's everywhere, and according to our own internal national intelligence estimates. And here's the calculus of that national security threat that we're talking about on your show on this Tuesday night. We're talking about fanatical religiosity in the guise of fundamentalist, dominionist Christianity, mm-hmm. about 12.6% of the American public, mixed in with real weapons of mass destruction. We have them. The other maniacs over there don't have them yet, we hope. Mixed in with completely misguided patriotism, completely, totally unfettered access because of the military chain of command, a total abrogated oath that is taken by everyone in the military to preserve, protect, support, and defend the Constitution, not somebody's weaponized gospel of the New Testament. Mixed in with a complete dearth of and lack of any restraint, oversight, or supervision, and mm-hmm. then you have this national security threat. It's very, very serious. And as I said before, I just had to sit back and and watch this speech tonight from West Point, try to make a message. But one of the companies there is called the Crusaders. Is that and we're already look like the 10th version of the Crusade. Everybody, we're fighting over there.
That's true. You know, I'm thinking about Christian teachings talking about don't worry about the mote in someone else's eye. Get the 2x4 out of your own.
Yes,
and,
my favorite.
And we there's a constant talk about the Muslim atom bomb. The Pakistanis have nuclear weapons. Well, so do the Indians. So do we call it the Sikh, and so to the Israelis. So do we call it the Jewish bomb, the Pakistani bomb, the Muslim bomb. And yet, I don't see the Pakistanis trying to exit their borders and invade somebody. I mean, maybe somebody who understands military affairs or geopolitical affairs better than I will say, well, you're wrong, Malloy. They're trying to take over Afghanistan. But to that, I say bat squeeze. So we're talking about this Pakistan nuclear weaponry that if we don't go over there and fight, it's going to fall into the hands of Muslim terrorists, when we, in fact, according to you and according to a lot of people, we are the ones with this crazy Armageddonist. You know, the Muslims and the Jews, they're not waiting for somebody come out of the sky and rapture people up and piles of corpses and dead bodies. It's this crazy Christianity. You want to stick around for another segment?
Sure.
Okay, I got to take a break here. So hold on, let me put you on hold. We'll take a break and come back. We'll pick it up there if I can remember where in the hell we're at. All right, we're talking with Mikey Weinstein, who is the founder and president of Military Religious Freedom Foundation. Go to militaryreligiousfreedom.org. Is that right, Mikey? Militaryreligiousfreedom.org?
Yes.
Okay, that's his website. Check it out. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
That's me in the corner. That's me in the spot.
to border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse. Second time today.
Welcome back. It's about 25 before the hour. We're talking with Mikey Weinstein, who's a founder and president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. Before we get back to the conversation, I want to remind you something I told you last night. Tomorrow night in Los Angeles, there is a March for Peace and Nonviolence. It'll start at 6 p.m. L.A. time at Wilshire and Alvarado Streets. That's MacArthur Park. It's a corner where MacArthur Park is. And we'll go to Emmanuel Presbyterian Church, where there'll be live speakers and music, and you're asked to bring a flashlight. So if you're in the L.A. area tomorrow night, a March for Peace and Nonviolence, corner of Wilshire and Alvarado at MacArthur Park. And if you want more information about that, go to KPFK, KPFK, like call letters for a radio station, KPFK.org for more information. Again, Mikey Weinstein is our guest here for, I think we can get him for another segment here. What do you see as a rational way, a logical way, a workable way to stop this evangelizing of the U.S. military? It can only be horrific. Didn't the Nazis used to have on their belt buckles, Gott mit uns? Or God with us, this militarized religious stuff to me is beyond belief, because anything can happen. Once you're told that God says do it, well, all bets are off.
It really is a conversation stopper. You know, when someone says, this is my faith, you know, and it's amazing because we talk about how serious this national security threat is, and almost no one can believe it. Unless, Mike, they're complicit, you know, and it's
really
it's absolutely astonishing. Well, I get asked this all the time. Look, nobody ever changes their mind because they, quote, suddenly see the light. They have to feel the heat. So our foundation, the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, we're very militant. You know, we're militant, and our militancy is in support of the U.S. Constitution, and that supports everybody's right to gloriously and comprehensively celebrate whatever religious faith or no faith that they mm-hmm. want to, but it seems that not any one faith has the right to engage the machinery of the state, and in this case, the most powerful part of that, you know, which is where all the sticks and stones are that break our bones, that's the Defense Department.
Right.
So we know that guidance and counseling, that doesn't work. We give up on our lobbyists because it seems as though, you know, under Republicans, man exploits man, and under Democrats, it's just the opposite. You know, this is not a political spectrum left or right issue. It's a constitutional right and wrong issue.
Right.
We believe that we go to the media. We're currently suing the Pentagon in a massive federal lawsuit. We have another lawsuit going. We have a new one that will be coming soon. And we basically think we need about 400 general court-martials. People, the Romans had it right. You lop off somebody's head and stick it on a pole, and everybody suddenly changes their attitude, because they're not going to get this. Those that are too stupid, it's the stupidity that is born from willful ignorance. And, you know, I go back to those that sit back and do nothing. Like, if in fact we were talking about the terrible situation at Fort Hood, if Major Nadal Malik Hassan had in fact been proselytizing, you know, Islam to his patients, not only should he have been court-martialed, but all those that sat back and did nothing mm-hmm. are equally complicit. I mean, Martin Luther King said it great that in the end we remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends.
Right.
There comes a time when silence becomes betrayal.
And yet, the proselytizing for this Christian Armageddonism or Dominionism goes on constantly.
Oh, it's literally around the clock. I mean, it's just the stories are too almost unbelievable. Like as I said, we have video, we've got audio, we've got text, we've got pictures. It's all over the website at militaryreligiousfreedom.org. You know, we're a nonprofit charity. We were stunned 6 weeks ago when we received a nomination for the Nobel Peace Prize for 2010. It came a week after Obama won his.
Mm-hmm.
So we were very happy. That's wonderful and great, but it's only wonderful and great if it actually, if it serves as a an underpinning and a foundation for people to realize, oh my God, this is extremely serious.
Do you
have to do something about this?
Let me ask you, what's probably going to come across as a loaded question to some of the listeners, but do you find that the people most open to this religious fundamentalism are people of, not very bright, or if that's the wrong term, not very well educated?
No, there's no question. There's a look, our biggest backers are not Jewish organizations. I happen to be Jewish, but they're not Jewish organizations. Our biggest backers include the California Council of Churches Impact, and that's 5,500 Protestant congregations in California alone. 29 different denominations, and millions of California Protestants. This is a situation where there's a tremendous lack of education, where people's minds are, it hurts to think, it actually hurts to question, and it really is a rare Homo sapien, a rare human being that has the ability to speak truth to power. Because in the military, if you're even being gently evangelized by your military superior, "Get the hell out of my face, sir or ma'am," is not an option for you. So they come to us and we do it.
Well, fundamentalist Christianity has always scared me. That's one of the reasons I got a gun permit 20 years ago, because of all the death threats I got here in Georgia from the Christian Reconstruction Movement. You want to meet some real freaks. I'm sure you're very familiar with the Christian Reconstruction Movement.
Well, in fact, we use the term that the people were fighting. We use the term premillennial, dispensational, reconstructionist, dominionist, fundamentalist evangelical Christians, a long term.
And very deadly.
Absolutely. And the people that we're talking about that brought this over and started it.
Rush Dooney.
We're not attacking anybody's faith. We're not trying to take anybody's cuddly, warm Jesus teddy bear away. If the Hindus or Muslims were doing this, or the Jews, we'd be going after them too, or the Catholics or the mainline Protestants. You know what, Mike? But they're not. Reconstructionist, dominionist, premillennial folks.
Yeah, it is. And it's scary when you think that people of that belief system who seem to be pushing the idea of that somehow their Messiah is going to be so thrilled to see all the bloody corpses piled all the way up to heaven that he's going to come sliding down on blood skis, I guess, and say, "Hey, you all did a good job. Now let's all rapture up to heaven." To me, that's a horror story. That's something out of a Hieronymus Bosch painting, or it's just something horrifying to think that the military. I always believed, or I was brought up to believe, that there was a huge separation between church and state. Ha ha ha! Even though when I was a kid growing up, there was prayer in school, but I still believed that there was separation. I never heard of. I knew from going to the John Wayne movies that there were chaplains who would pray with the soldiers in World War II or in Korea, right before the soldiers got blown away. But I had no idea that this was developing, and it wasn't until I discovered your organization that. And I've quoted you a lot on the program. That this was opened up to me. Mikey, listen, I stay in touch. It's militaryreligiousfreedom.org.
Correct. We're a nonprofit charity, and if anyone, I ask people to give us 600 seconds, go to the website, look at what we've got there. It's unbelievable. It's mind-ripping. And, we've got to get, it's very hard to get Americans to stop watching Dancing with the Stars and American Idol, because we seem to be dealing with, Homer and Marge Simpson America of a lot of docile and supine idiots, and we have to get off our butts and actually do something now.
I hear you. Mikey, thanks a lot.
Be well.
All right, man. Stay in touch.
We'll do.
All right,
no
sir.
Problem.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Mikey Weinstein, go to his website, militaryreligiousfreedom.org. But Mike, he was a Republican. Sometimes you do have to align. I don't know what kind of a Republican he is, and I don't know who's a Republican anymore, except the Sarah Palin crowd. Obviously, he's not in that crowd. Isn't that the Republican Party? I doubt very seriously if Mikey Weinstein gives a tinker's damn about Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin, which will be the 2012 ticket for the Republican Party, or something even worse. There's a guy I listen to this program. Dolgov is his name, and he says, and again, I have no way of checking this. I take things at face value. He's written to me a couple of times from the old Soviet Union. He was in the Air Force there, and he listens to the program, and I'm going to read it just the way he wrote it. "Dear Mike, after his speech, I started to pray God that he reduce the suffering American soldiers going to Afghanistan. American leaders did not know or do not want to know the history. As a result, the Afghan land mixed with blood of Soviet soldiers will now be mixed with blood of U.S. soldiers, and thousands of lives of innocent Afghans will be mixed in this bloody dirt.
We veterans of the Soviet-Afghan War offer condolences to the American people for the idiocy of leaders. Political wars started Soviet Politburo, continue American Politburo, the military-industrial complex, and Republican Party. Believe us, we know what happened very soon. Afghans will start fight like wild animals against aggressors. God, please keep American soldiers alive, but chances for that less and less and less. Colonel Igor Dolgov. All right, like I say, I just like Colonel Six, the American military that writes to me. I accept these emails at face value. If somebody's doing a number on me, whatever. Won't be the first time. It's time for another break. When we come back, I think I'm going to try to. Going to try to squeeze in. I got this letter from Bob Alexander. It's not a moment with Bob, so there'd be no theme music. He just wrote something. He's just very pissed off, so I'm going to share it with you. You know, just because he doesn't do moments with Bob anymore doesn't mean he doesn't send emails. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Losing hope is easy.
The truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. It's getting pretty crazy in here, isn't it? All right, we're opening up the lines again, and for the rest of the program, we'll take some calls about what you heard tonight from Obama. The attitude. Coming in through emails and phone calls on this program is running almost unanimous against what he had to say. And I don't think that's a surprise. I really don't. Anyway, I want to share this with you from Bob. he has a son, Nick. Bob writes, Nick had just turned 3 when the United States shocked, awed, and invaded Iraq. There were photographs from Iraq on the net I didn't want to look at. I reluctantly clicked on the link anyway and saw a picture of a little boy about Nick's age, dead in the rubble with his skull hollowed out. He wasn't killed by a bus, so safe didn't fall on him. He didn't have cancer or any other disease. It wasn't an accident. He died because the United States broke into the country illegally and walked up this little kid and blew his brains out at the top of his skull. Of the 1.2 million killed in Iraq, 60% of the dead are women and children. The mindless platitudes from warmongers mitigating collateral damage as a regrettable byproduct of war makes me puke. Collateral is what you do, what you use to guarantee getting a loan. It's not a little kid blown up on the side of the road. If anyone killed my boy, I would spend the rest of my life tracking down the murderers so I could kill them. Because I would be insane. Tonight, Barack Hussein Obama told us why he's sending 30,000 more people into Afghanistan. Their job is to kill people. The people in Afghanistan who don't want to be killed will try to kill as many of the American forces as they can. The reason for this war, according to the authorized story put forth by the Bush administration, is that the terrorist attacks of 9/11 were orchestrated by Osama bin Laden, then operating in Afghanistan. 15 of the 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia, 2 from the United Arab Emirates, 1 from Egypt, 1 from Lebanon. The Bush administration never provided any proof of Osama bin Laden's involvement in the 9/11 attacks on the Pentagon and the World Trade Center to the American people, nor did the Bush administration provide any proof to the Afghan government. Afghanistan's deputy prime minister offered to deliver bin Laden to a third country if they were shown the incriminating evidence. It never happened. Without showing any proof of why we had to go to war, on October 7th, 2001, the United States began bombing the crap out of Afghanistan on the say-so of a certifiable idiot and his gang of thieves. How many Afghans have been killed or wounded since war began? Some accounts say over 20,000 killed.
over 50,000 wounded. But we can't know for sure because last July, the U.S. military in Afghanistan stopped releasing body counts of insurgents believed killed in operations because, according to the military spokesman, quote, the tolls distract from the U.S. objective of protecting Afghans, end quote. The strutting puppet who signed off on two wars has been out of office since last January. And tonight, Barack Obama joins the ranks of world leaders who have ordered death and destruction for no good goddamn reason. We've gone from being led into wars by an incoherent oaf to being led by an erudite, charming man to continue the wars. I don't care what Obama said tonight. He couldn't possibly come up with any good reasons for doing what he's doing. It doesn't make any difference why he's sending thousands more onto the killing floor. Is Obama and his family being held hostage by the military-industrial complex? Is he being coerced into continued war for profit by the powers that be? Is it because 93% of the opiates of the world market, worth $64 billion a year, originate in Afghanistan? Or is it because Obama truly believes that throwing 30,000 more troops into that enigmatic nation will somehow produce something that has never occurred historically in that country, a Western-style democracy? Because if this is what you get, that the result of the process is a little kid with his brains blasted out by the side of the road, a family gathering slaughtered by remote control aerial drones, more death, more wounded, more destruction, more madness, then it's completely wrong. The plan is wrong. The rules are wrong. The whole goddamn thing is wrong. It doesn't make any difference what the reasons are if you end up with innocent people blown to hash. Why is it that we understand something that seems to elude our presidents? You're not supposed to kill people. It's against the law. It's only acceptable in self-defense. The only people who commit premeditated murder are insane. The textbook definition of a psychopath from Wikipedia is they lack a conscience and empathy. They take what they want and do as they please, violating social norms and expectations without guilt or remorse. What is missing, in other words, are the very qualities that allow a human being to live in social harmony. Barack Hussein Obama is either a psychopath or is doing the bidding of psychopaths. I don't care. All I know is that he isn't worth supporting anymore. He's just another crappy politician. Someday he might write a big bloated memoir and tell all about how he agonized over sending more troops to Afghanistan. I don't give a rat's ass over how much agonizing he's gone through. The bottom line is he didn't make the right decision. Innocent people are going to die because of what he said and what he set into motion tonight. I've heard Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, and George W. Bush tell me why we had to go kill people. Every one of them was a goddamn liar. Now it's Barack Obama's turn to look straight into the camera and lie his ass off. Goddamn him and every single moral weakling who signs off on this. Screw these people. Bob Alexander. In addition to the peace march tomorrow in L.A., in Seattle, at the Federal Building on 2nd Avenue, tomorrow night, 6 to 7 p.m. Seattle time, tomorrow night, Women Standing will be present. And it says, we personally invite all with deep respect for those killed and for the intention of peace. That's tomorrow night, if you're in Seattle, at the Federal Building on 2nd Avenue, 6 to 7 p.m. And if you're in L.A., meet at MacArthur Park. And I gave you the coordinates to that. All right. We'll be back after the break. We'll continue your phone calls. If you're if you got something to say about what Obama said tonight, please call in. The number, I'm sorry, I haven't given it all night. The number is 877-996-2556. We'll be back. I'm Mike Molloy.
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Show. We're still focusing on what Obama had to say tonight. We're going to take your calls and also some emails here. David Sirota has put something together real quick, too, I want to share with you. Also, there are two peace marches in L.A. tomorrow. One is at 6 p.m., the one we've been announcing from the Stars at MacArthur Park. There's another one at 5 p.m. tomorrow that gathers at the Federal Building in Westwood, which is in West L.A. They're about 10 miles apart, both at rush hour. So you have your choice there. You can go to MacArthur Park. At the address I said, at the location I said, that march will go to Emmanuel Presbyterian Church, and then there's one that will gather at the Federal Building in Westwood, in West LA at 5 p.m. tomorrow, Wednesday. Both of these are on Wednesday, and in Seattle at the Federal Building on Wednesday. So whatever effort you might want to make to participate, you've got two choices in L.A., if you can't get to one, there's the other one. What was said tonight, I don't know. What Obama said tonight either is going to crush, for once and for all, any peace and justice movement in this country. Boom, it's dead. Or it's going to reanimate it to the point where maybe people will start turning out, realizing that, you know, say hi to the new boss, same as the old boss. You know, I'm still. This was no big surprise. We knew that. We knew this was going to happen. We knew Obama was going to make this decision. But still, to hear the let me share with you what Sirota had to say. All right. So once again, tomorrow. 5 p.m., the Federal Building in Westwood, which is West L.A., Peace March. 6 p.m., MacArthur Park, also a gathering. So take your pick. If you're in Seattle, at the Federal Building at 6 p.m. also. I think Federal Building at 6 p.m. Oh, hell. David writes, just a few quick questions to ponder after Obama's speech announcing a massive escalation in Afghanistan. The very first being, shouldn't we be able to honestly answer these queries before mindlessly cheering on a deployment of more troops to a Central Asian war zone? Here they are in no particular order. What percentage of those kids in the West Point audience will die because of this decision? Would you be okay sending yourself or a loved one over to face combat and potential death for the mission Obama articulated in Afghanistan? If not, how can you support sending other people? Why do so many pundits and pro-Obama activists continue to focus on how hard and difficult and trying this decision is for President Obama rather than on how hard and difficult and trying this would be for the soldiers who are killed? Doesn't Obama get to make this decision and then go home to the comfortable confines of a butlered White House while thousands of Americans will be sent 7,000 miles from home to face their potential deaths? Isn't the latter harder than the former? Where's the anti-war movement and the marches and the organizing and the protesting? Where's all those well-funded groups that protested George W. Bush's war policy? Or was that all really just about hating George W. Bush and embracing blind partisan war syndrome? In the days and weeks after this speech, will the White House's cynical new spin get ever more desperate and become, hey, at least an Afghanistan escalation holds out the possibility of making sure military combat casualties start outpacing military suicides? David is being very cynical tonight, isn't he? Another question, simple budget question. Should we now believe that escalating the Afghanistan war at the same annual cost of universal health care will save more than 45,000 Americans a year, i.e. the number of Americans who die every year for lack of health insurance? Did CNN really turn a move to send thousands of Americans to potentially die in Central Asia into an over-stylized, hyper-marketed television show called Decision Afghanistan? Yes, they did. Is the media really that soulless, or did my eyes betray me? Because it's really hard for me to believe that even in this cynical age, a television network tried to make a cheap reality TV show out of life and death decisions that could affect tens of thousands of people.
Which is worse, a stupid person like George W. Bush starting a dumb occupation, or a smart person like Barack Obama following the lead of the stupid person but actually escalating that occupation? The "we're going to escalate war to end war" refrain throughout the speech. Have we heard that before somewhere? It sounds sort of like, "we'll burn down the Vietnamese villages to save them." Just curious if that's what we're talking about here, because, you know, that worked out really well. Are we really expected to believe that massively escalating a war is a way to end a war? I mean, really? Like, is the public really looked at like we're that stupid? And a follow-up question, are we really that stupid? If Obama's Afghan war strategy about escalating a war to end a war was a self-help strategy for, say, alcoholics, wouldn't it prescribe drinking more whiskey to stop drinking? And wouldn't we all laugh at that? How many pundits will insist that bowing down to the military-industrial complex and escalating this missionless war somehow shows resolve and strength and toughness and leadership and not embarrassing weakness? With the Obamaphiles now telling us to give President Obama a chance with this decision and or defending Obama's escalation, would these same people be saying we should give President McCain a chance? Or defending President McCain's escalation if he was the one in office making this decision? I'm confused. Is this hope or change, David? Well, I know where a couple of peace demonstrations are going to be tomorrow. Oy. In Detroit, just got an email from Peter Werby, one of the few liberals left on Earth. Federal building in downtown Detroit tomorrow, 4 p.m. So if you're, that's sponsored by the Detroit Area Peace with Justice Network. So if you are in the Detroit metro area, federal building, downtown Detroit, on Michigan Avenue, 4 p.m. tomorrow. They have to do theirs at 4 p.m. because it gets dark in Detroit at 4:30 this time of the year. Thanks, Peter. Okay, so now you've got two in L.A., Seattle and Detroit. Anybody else? We'll announce them. Oh, man. What else we got here? Hold on a minute. Let me see here. Oh, my God. Okay. Mike, I really appreciate your show, but you should stop being a liar. That's the way this one starts. President Obama made clear during the 2008 campaign what his policy in Afghanistan would be, but this is the key point and reveals your failure to fact check your smears and slanders. This policy is exactly what Barack Obama promised. I refer you to his 2000 campaign manifesto, Change We Can Believe In, Barack Obama's Plan to Renew America's Promise, published by Three Rivers Press, blah, 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 blah. Please read pages 107, 114, particularly this passage. Quote, Barack Obama will deploy at least an additional two brigades of American troops to Afghanistan to reinforce our counterterrorism operations and support NATO's efforts to fight the Taliban, unquote. In those chapters of his manifesto, Obama also outlines how his strategy relies on allies, global alliances, diplomacy, and serious efforts to defend this nation. In other words, the complete opposite of the Cheney-Bush criminal junta. This was something Obama said over and over again in speeches and in 2008 debates with Hillary Clinton and John McCain. Ignorance of the facts is really no defense. As a public commentator, you have an obligation to do research and read newspapers and documents such as the policy proposal papers Obama put out in 2000. What the hell are you talking about? So get your facts straight and quit lying. He promised to end the war in Iraq and bring the troops home, which is in progress. He promised to send more troops to Afghanistan. But since you and your ilk praise certified crazy people like Cynthia McKinney, you probably are a 9/11 truther screaming about Building 7 and chemtrails. Thus, you and your fellow Maoists are irrelevant and can't be taken seriously. What the hell is, what is this guy talking about? Oh, Jesus Christ. We certainly attract him to this show, don't we?
is your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. A couple more have come in here. American Friends Service Committee and Veterans for Peace are holding a candlelight vigil tomorrow night, also in San Francisco. It'll be on 7th Street at the new federal office building that has Speaker Pelosi's office. And it's sponsored, like I said, American Friends Service Committee and Veterans for Peace. So if you're in the San Francisco area tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow evening, at 5 in the afternoon, the new federal office building at 9070th Street in San Francisco. Lansing, Michigan, tomorrow at noon, State Capitol building at the corner of Michigan Avenue and Capitol Avenue. That's in Lansing, Michigan. And in Eugene, Oregon, 5 p.m. tomorrow at the 8th and Oak at Wayne Morse Free Speech Plaza. If you live in Eugene, Oregon, 8th and Oak will be followed by a short rally and march to the old federal building through 5 p.m. So you can gather there, I would imagine, around 4 o'clock in Eugene, Oregon at the Wayne Morse Free Speech Plaza, 8th and Oak. What else? One more here. Two events in the San Francisco Bay Area. 3:30 tomorrow in Berkeley at the Marine Recruiting Station on Shattuck Avenue, Shattuck Square, and at 4 p.m. people will be marching to the downtown Berkeley BART train. The plan is to take BART to Powell and Market to meet up with folks who will be protesting in San Francisco. And you can get more information on that at worldcantwait.net. All right. A couple of quick emails. If you're on hold, stay there. I'm going to get your call, I promise. But this is from Claude in New Jersey. Dear Mike, I understand your disappointment. What I find most sad is the lack of knowledge of the decision makers regarding the culture of other countries. There's an ex-Marine captain named Ho. That's the guy who was the one that resigned his commission, isn't it? Yeah. Doing the rounds of TV shows these days, who resigned to protest the increase of troops. Excuse me, not resigned his commission. He was in the State Department. He's a former Marine. After having been there, he explains that the root of the problem is foreign troops' presence in Afghanistan. The Afghans do not want foreigners in their valleys and villages. Besides, our soldiers are caught in the crossfire of a civil war between the urban and rural Afghan people. His presentation was compelling. There's also a book, Le Sage du Monde, written by a Swiss author in the mid-50s called, the author is Nicolas Bouvier, who drove through Afghanistan and studied the people there. It is clear that there is no national cohesion, but sheer tribal resentments. The writing's on the wall. Everyone who is not from there needs to get out. Claude in New Jersey. This is from AA2. Need to put a name on these, all right? Mike, I listened to Obama this evening with a mixture of shock and near comedic hysteria. I cannot believe that someone as intelligent as he is could have believed one word of what he was saying. I believe this all stems back from what I've referred to for the past two decades as the Dallas 63 syndrome. I wonder what Obama thinks when he is in meetings with those national security dudes. What happens inside his heart when he meets their eyes? Does he remember his history? Does he know the precise circumstances leading up to Dallas in 63? Kennedy expresses grave concern about Vietnam from his American University speech of July 1963. Quote, unless the government in Vietnam is able to win more popular support, I don't believe the war can be won. In the final analysis, it's their fight. They're the ones who have to win it and create a new future. End quote. So is he, as many people say, a prisoner of the right wing, a 21st century Roman imperial potentate surrounded by a Praetorian guard, the tentacles of which are controlled by the corporatists? You better believe it. You better believe it is in the email. Suzanne in L.A. Good evening, Mike. Has Brock read Three Cups of Tea by Greg Mortensen? I believe Greg actually deserves the Nobel Peace Prize for the incredibly difficult work he's done in Afghanistan and Pakistan building schools. This book has been on the bestseller list for years. If Barack hasn't read it, maybe Michelle has and could pass it along. Schools are great investments. Bombs and drones destroy. Suzanne in L.A. All right, we have another break. When we come back, some phone calls, and I'll try to get to some more of your emails. It's a freaky night, isn't it? I don't know. There's no surprise. I mean, we all knew what the deal was going to be. We've known. Like one of the emailer there was getting in my case about being stupid or a Maoist or something. You dumbass, a Maoist. Jesus Christ. Can't some of you emailers, you know, come, throw these terms around? Can't you get them straight? You don't have a clue what a Maoist is, or else you don't have a clue what I am. But, of course Obama said these things. So what? You know, so what? He's a politician. And half the American people don't want anything to do with this. And the half that say, yeah, let's go kill them, are crazy sons of bitches that should be ignored. Bees made honey.
The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Fat Charlie the Archangel sloped into the room. It's 26 before the hour. And I have no opinion about that. There's a website you can get some information about demonstrations, unitedforpeace.org, unitedforpeace.org. I haven't gone there. I don't know how current the list is, but go to unitedforpeace.org. Kevin writes, regarding Obama, if only he'd mentioned either oil, the drug trade, or the military industrials, along with, quote, another Vietnam, end quote, as opposing reasons for the war, he'd still have me. On the other hand, my cousin said those two party crashers the other night might have been a message to Obama warning him that if he did go with the right script tonight, that they were capable of getting past security and straight to him. Lloyd is in Long Beach listening on KTLK. Hey, Lloyd.
Hi, Mike. You know, he had a chance to break with the Nazi Reinhard Gehlen and Alan Dulles' foreign policy that was set up when they cut their deal before the end of World War II. Then it morphed into the Russian desk of the CIA, and they grabbed the loot that the Japanese had stashed in the Philippines and probably into Indonesia. They parked it in 40-some banks around the world, and that became the CIA's slush fund to run a fascist foreign policy on the world since World War II. He had a chance to break with that. Mm-hmm. He's not breaking with that. And I really urge your listeners to call the White House tomorrow and ask Obama to release the Dulles Correa, C-O-R-R-E-A, Jackson Memorandum. L. Fletcher Prouty, who probably flew some of that loot out of the Philippines for the CIA, he called the Dulles Correa Jackson Memorandum Alan Dulles' Mein Kampf.
Right.
If anybody has any illusions that the CIA is not world-class terrorism and that he is amplifying the same agenda, Edward Lansdale, before he did the black propaganda on the Catholics to get us involved in the Vietnam War, which was a huge bloodbath, he was putting down the rebellion of the Philippine freedom fighters who wanted to free the Philippines after World War II. And I could never figure out what was that about until I read Gold Warriors by...
All right, listen, you give me too many book titles here and it makes people's eyes glaze over.
Yeah, but it's not just book titles. It's the fact that they've been running literally a fascist foreign
policy. Well, right.
Since the end of World War II.
CIA
is the world's biggest terrorist organization.
Yeah, and I think most people agree with you, Lloyd. And you know, you get no resistance from me. I'm just saying, and I've said this to callers before, when you start with the authors and the books and so on and so forth, you know, people just go blotto. You know, what I'm looking for in calls to the program is something that you think or you feel, and on a night like tonight, I like to keep it short. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, thanks, Lloyd. I hear what you're saying. I appreciate it. Pete is in New York City listening on XM. Hey, Pete.
Hey, Mike, let me preface this by saying I protested the Vietnam War. I worked in Nicaragua during the Contra War. I got arrested during the first Gulf War. But I do see some value in the intervention in Afghanistan. And I look at this from the point of view as being an anti-theist and someone who is against totalitarian theocracies. All these people that are complaining about our intervention there are not the ones that have to live there with their wives being arrested for leaving the house without their male counterparts, watching women being taken away from work, not being arrested because they showed their ankles, having photography outlawed, recording.
Okay, wait, Pete.
These are disgusting to you,
Pete,
too, Mike.
Pete,
and I don't
Pete.
See why you don't see the value in...
Pete, goddammit. All right, I'll put you on hold. If I can't get a word in edgewise, God damn it, I'll put you on hold. Let's invade Saudi Arabia then. Let's invade, you know, pick a list of countries. Let's go to India. Let's invade India. Because if you screw up and don't provide enough dowry for your daughter, then the groom's family will burn her to death. You know, God damn it, stop it, Pete. You want to send American soldiers to go kill, you know, you're talking about cultural customs that you and I find abhorrent. Of course they're abhorrent. So what do you want to do? Huh? If you want to stop all this stuff in Afghanistan, then you go sign up and bring about 750,000 extra Americans with you, because that's what it's going to take. That's nonsense, Pete, and you know it is. Don't call my program with that kind of crap. Just don't. If you have some reason that you want to support escalation and murder and mayhem in Afghanistan, fine. But don't say you want to do it based on some cultural a pain in the ass that you just can't stand. I can't stand it either. But how many countries do you want to invade? Because they treat women badly, or they treat children badly, or, I mean, let's go to China. If somebody steals something in China, they'll cut their goddamn head off and then put them in the bodies exhibit. You know, come on, man. If the people of Afghanistan aren't willing to make the changes, then, I mean, what kind of cultural arrogance is this? You want to go do it, or you want to send troops to do it? What do you want to do? Jesus. Robert is in Daly City, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Robert!
Well, he's just trying to find a solution to the problems, that's all.
Yeah? Who, Obama? Obama or the caller?
No, your last caller.
Oh, yeah.
I like informed callers that have names of books and stuff like that. I find that informative. But I was going to call about ASM, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and his upcoming trial. People are aware that the Saudi trial that the 9/11 victims' families brought against the Saudis, the suit, it just went up in smoke. It went nowhere. Well, I kind of wonder that it couldn't withstand discovery. There was a whole lot of questions about 9/11 that were never really thoroughly answered, and I don't think they ever will be in a court. I think the same thing is true with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. He's confessed to things that he couldn't possibly be involved in. He's been tortured. If he was just coerced with threats, before he said anything, that testimony's all out the window, too.
All right,
so.
Well, Eric, I know where you're going with this. Eric Holder says that they have enough evidence that has nothing to do with whatever was said by any of these people when they were being tortured. And yep. and Holder understands that if he takes these people to trial and doesn't get convictions, all hell will break loose. The right way will be merciless. So, you know, they're not going to, wait a second. The whole idea of the military tribunals is, or the military courts, they don't have discovery. They don't have, you can admit hearsay evidence, all kinds of stuff. Trying these people in federal court, I think is a good idea. The crime was committed in the United States, yada, yada, yada. But by God, they better have more than what was taken from, these people under in terms of torture. If they don't, then they're in trouble. However, I also understand that the federal judges have an awful lot of power to restrict not just testimony but lines of questioning. So, you know, at least it'll beat the hell out of the what's his name, O.J. Simpson trial, right?
Well, yeah, and they're blaming a lot of. They're blaming the collapse of the towers on those two jets crashing.
Yeah, I know. But like I said earlier tonight, I want to stay with what we're talking about here, okay? I appreciate what you had to say. And no, I'm not a gatekeeper, 9/11 gatekeeper. I don't believe the bull crap either. You know, I just don't want to talk about it tonight. We got this other stuff to talk about. What do you want me to do? Okay? Obviously, I'm getting a little pissed off. I'm sorry. Oh, my good friend Gary Gordon is calling from L.A. All right, Gary, what's up?
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Listen, I got to criticize all the focus on marches.
Right.
The lack of focus on sending a true message to Obama. The only appropriate response to the speech tonight, I believe, is for people to register anti-war third party, and they should do it this week. If all the people who were opposed to the war were to pull out of the Democrat Party, were to pull out of being independent, and were to register Peace and Freedom, if you're in California, or Green, or any other ballot access third party, it will send a more powerful message than any number of marches by any number of thousands of people.
Well, you know, I agree. You know my point on demonstrations. We've talked about this before, but the reason I'm mentioning these demonstrations because some of these seem like spur of the moment. Like, what the hell are people supposed to do? Okay, on the day after, you know, they can change their party affiliation. They can drop out of the Democratic Party. They can say, screw it, I've had enough. I agree with you, Gary. But on the other hand, if people have got to say something, I mean, if you don't join with 10 or 10,000 or 100,000 other people and say, no, God damn it, I don't agree with this. You know, people can explode. You remember, you and I are of the Vietnam generation. You remember.
I remember, but it was also tied to something that had to do with gaining power. And you mentioned the demonstrations in L.A., which have actually been planned for a while.
Hey, hold on a minute. Let me put you on hold. I got to do some commercials here. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
To times like Korea, there's no one more red, white, and blue. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. I vote for the Democratic Party. They want the UN to be strong.
It's 10 before the hour. We're talking to Gary, who is calling from L.A. All right, where were we?
I was going to say about the demonstrations you mentioned in L.A. They've been planned for a while. I've been to them before. People stand out in front of the federal building on Wilshire. Some people drive by and honk. Other people just get pissed off that traffic is being disrupted. And the people there just hand out their literature to each other. They're already all opposed to what's going on. There's no real organizing happening. Yes, it's a feel-good moment for people to get together and say, hey, we all agree with this, mm-hmm. but that's got that can't be the end of it. And all too often in the last 8 years, that has been the end of it.
Right.
People took that energy and re-registered to send a message. If you imagine the millions of people who are against this war, both these wars, mm-hmm. all these wars, were to pull out of the Democratic Party and register in a ballot access anti-war party, that would send a more powerful message. And then if they got to work and organized people, genuine door-to-door, block-to-block, precinct organizing, rather than, oh, we're going to have a big march, we're going to pay for the permit, we're going to pay the man, the protest against the man. It's crazy.
I hear you, Gary.
I mean, yes, you and I have been there. We were there, God, we were there, what was it, 35 years ago? Yeah, and the whole thing is just this absolutely horrible deja vu.
Mm.
But I just don't want to see people make the same mistakes that were made in the past.
Yeah, I know. The model, though, for people, say, under the age of 30, the model is what they think they saw, at least they saw the movies, of what was done in the 60s. And it was effective in the 60s. I don't know. There was no big reversal of the military-industrial complex. There was no big reversal of U.S. imperialism. But to whatever degree, what was done in the 60s and early 70s was effective in getting that filthy Indochinese war stopped. But that's the only model. You know, re-registering it doesn't produce good video. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I understand absolutely, and that's why. I mean, it'd be more like hey, let's just do this, and suddenly it has an impact. And if the media doesn't pick up on it, who gives a, you know?
Mm-hmm.
it'd be great if the media picked up on it. It'd be great if people did this. It'd be great if the media picked up on it. But if they don't, it still happened. If you remember the 60s, for all the peaceful demonstrations, it's when people started using their electoral power.
Mm-hmm.
To actually back peace candidates.
Well, that's true. LBJ didn't run until people started to work for Gene McCarthy, and then of course Bobby Kennedy jumped in. But you're absolutely right. Of political activism, you know, you go back to Saul Alinsky. If you really want to get something done, organize, organize, organize. I agree. But you know, I get these emails from people who are going to have a demonstration, going to have a parade or a peace, you know, a candlelight vigil. And I hope they understand that's only part of it. And I think
what then?
Right. Well, I think that's what you're saying is, you know, have the vigil, have the demonstration, but don't stop there.
And all too often in the last 8 years, what I've seen is that's where people stop. I mean, as you know, I've been working on organizing with the Peace and Freedom Party mm-hmm. out here for the last few years, and we see all this tremendous energy put into these demonstrations, and then it evaporates. And come election time, or come time to try and find candidates to run,
right?
And people are absent. Whether it's the older generation, the younger generation, different cultural attitudes. There's a lot of people who just signed off on the system altogether. I've never seen that work.
I've only got a couple of minutes left on the show tonight, but I want to ask you what, you know, just give me an overview of what you heard tonight and how you feel about where we're going. I'm about ready to suck the gas pipe to tell you the truth. No, not really. I'm never, ever, ever. But you know what I'm saying. What's your overview? What's going to happen? Come on, look into your crystal ball, Gary, and tell us.
What's going to happen is if people don't respond appropriately and accordingly, then it is just going to be this terrible ongoing replay of what we've already had.
But how do you get people to respond to, we've already got 60,000 people. Well, how many we got? 50,000 people there, another 30,000. It's not like Bush invading Iraq. You understand what I'm saying?
I equate this with the Nixon incursion into Cambodia. It's like Bush going into Iraq was the Gulf of Tonkin speech. This is the Nixon going into Cambodia.
And the Kent State result.
But you don't have the fervor of Kent State because you haven't got 4 or 5 years. You haven't got the draft. You haven't got 4 or 5 years of active disruptive activity going on. We can try and use this opportunity to get people to send a strong message to the Democrats and to the independents, hoping that the independents will actually commit rather than straddling the fence. I'm just hoping, I'm calling it the counter surge. He's got his surge. This is the counter surge.
Mm-hmm.
Join the counter surge. Register third party. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I'm busy working on trying to make the improvement. So it's I don't want to get bogged down in the oh my God, it's hopeless. Is what some people are saying on Facebook, and
I know
trying to argue with that.
I know it's hard to make a positive case right now, but then again, you know.
But I didn't drink the Kool-Aid regarding Obama in the first place.
Well, I know, so. I know, and I supported him after he won the nomination. What am I going to do? Drop out?
Not drop out. You're going to start talking about. And you have on your show.
Right.
Talking about third party. And when people say we're going to go demonstrate, then you're going to say, and then what?
Yeah, that's
and
all right.
What it, you know.
I gotcha. All right, Gary, thanks for checking in, all right?
It's always great talking with you, Mike.
All right, man. Take care. Take care.
You too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Full disclosure, Gary and I have known each other for 35 years. We'll be back tomorrow. Take care, all right? A rough night. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.